This is an ABC podcast.
The Queensland Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
G'day, I'm Charlie McKillop, broadcasting from the biggest event on the agricultural calendar in the whole of Northern Australia. I know it's a big call, but over the next 3 days, 20,000 people, no less, will pour through the gates of the Mareeba Rodeo Grounds, just up from where I'm broadcasting today, at the start of FNQ Field Days. Now, there are hundreds of vendors here showing the best and latest of technology to try and help landholders make their operations more efficient, whatever they do and wherever that may be. But before you can pull out the checkbook, first you need to have money in the bank. And unfortunately, irrespective of what we hear about historically high red meat prices, global demand for protein around the world being at record levels, the bottom line for northern beef producers is nowhere near as rosy. In fact, beef operators, up to 75% of them around the country, are failing to make a profit. Now, the challenge to turn that around is not that of any one person or organisation. But my guest on the Queensland Country Hour today, this lunch hour, is the Managing Director of Meat and Livestock Australia, Jason Strong. Would you sum that up as your brief, Jason?
No, I wouldn't. I do understand what you're saying, and it's obviously a very big call, and we do appreciate those challenges. But I think the key point that you made is about how this is a collective challenge for us to deal with. We certainly understand the challenge, and it's great to get out to events like the Field Days here in North Queensland and get some very direct feedback about what it is we're doing and how we're doing it and what people would like us to do more of.
The ability to put weight on cattle is a fundamental building block of any grazing operation. What do you understand about why that challenge seems so more apparent in this part of the world?
I think in Northern Australia, the environmental conditions are very, very different to what they are in many other parts of Australia. And that's obviously the biggest contributor to the challenge of putting weight on livestock. And I think over the years, we've found different things that we can do to assist with that. But what we have to be investing in now, which I think is happening on a collaborative basis amongst the researchers and the Queensland Department of Ag, for example, and MLA, is identifying some of these more specific activities that can get cattle growing at a more consistent rate, get them to a market desirable specification sooner, and give them more market options.
Jason Strong, in your previous life, your career with AACo and the Smithfield Cattle Company, you know a bit about balance sheets. If you were to present a report to your shareholders at those companies suggesting that you're not going to turn a profit, or if you are, it's going to be a very marginal one, what would be the reaction if you were in those roles compared with now being the head of the peak marketing body for the industry?
I think it's a good analogy for us to think of, and it's one that it's easy for us to avoid in positions like mine now, where we're largely dealing with socialised funds, but we do have a lot of commercial relationships. But I think the comparison isn't a bad one, and we have to think about the funds that MLA and others like MLA have as investments by our stakeholders, whether they be cattle or sheep or goat meat producers, or whether they be the government or commercial organisations that are joint funding research with us. And we do have to be able to demonstrate a return on those investments. And those returns aren't always monetary. They might be market access. They might be availability to new markets. It might be information that people can use and leverage and exploit. But we do have to find a way to demonstrate that the money that we raise, $5 at a time, we can show a benefit back to our stakeholders for the investment they've made with that.
There's been a lot of discussion, it's a perennial issue, about how the MLA should or could or would be spending the levy payers' money, the $5 contribution they pay for every beast they sell. How do you believe, with the short time that you've been in the job, how do you believe you're doing at getting the return on that investment for them?
So there's no question we can never make everybody happy. We should be probably making more people happy than what we have been. And I think we need to work out what are the things that are important for the industry for us to focus on with R&D, but also we've got to make sure that we don't turn this into committee decisions or groupthink either, and part of the responsibility that we have is to make a value judgment about what it is that producers or producers groups would like to see us doing, and from all the information that we gather from around the world, what is it that we think is the most important thing to be doing, and it's our job to then sell that back to our stakeholders. So we've got to find a balance between what the industry would like to be done, and what we work out collectively is the best thing to be done.
You're hearing from Jason Strong, Managing Director of Meat and Livestock Australia, broadcasting for the Country Hour from the field days, Agricultural Field Day for Far North Queensland at the Mareeba Rodeo Grounds. Yesterday, though, we were all at another place, a little further west, and I think it's appropriate to highlight one of the real success stories of the MLAs. Yesterday, you were part of the formal launch of the commercial variety Redlands for a psyllid-resistant Lakina variety bred specifically for this part of the world. What did that mean to you to be the boss on a day when there was so much excitement around the paddock?
It was fantastic to be involved in that launch and to see a demonstration of the results of research and development and collaborative research. It wasn't just MLA, it was the UQ researchers and the department up here as well, which was fantastic. But most importantly out of the day, what I saw was the increased production potential from investments like Lakina, and to be able to produce a 400 kilo steer at 18 months of age off the type of country where we were at Pinnerendy yesterday, I think is really exciting. And if that's as a result in some small way of an MLA contribution to a research project, then that's exactly the sort of thing we should be doing, is adding some funds to a collaborative project that collectively comes up with a solution that the industry can then adopt and have a material difference to their productivity.
The results that were unveiled at that DAF trial at Pinnerendy, certainly very encouraging, with a doubling of what would normally be achieved over a 319-day period. I think the average daily weight gain there was 0.7 of a kilogram. Let's hear a bit of a snapshot of the views of some of the other northern beef producers who have already got Lakina, Redlands Lakina, in the ground.
Oh, you're always looking to improve your country and get the best out of it. And the price of land up there has gone pretty crazy, yeah. And so if we can improve it, the country, well, we're better off.
We're really impressed with the live weight gains.
It toughed it out through a very challenging dry season again. And then it had 600 mil of rain on it when that huge weather went through and got wet feet. So we only really got real growth out of it after it's warmed up this year. And we've got our first lot of weaners on it now. We've had issues with chittle deer, ruse, and we, in our rows, our 15-metre row spacings, we planted a lot of secca, which is phenomenal, been phenomenal production out of that. But it's also a competitor to the thing you're trying to establish, you know. So it's that's been interesting, but we're far from disillusioned. We think it's going to be, Linda and I are really positive about continuing to stretch ourselves to try and put more in.
We planted Lakina about 2007 and 8, which was Cunningham variety originally, and Redlands was being developed, so we said we'll wait until that comes out because the psyllids give us a hell of a lot of trouble. Look, there was little teething problems with establishing it, etc., and it's going very well. I'd have to say it's probably established similar to this here, definitely a better strike. Yeah, very happy with it, and I know that it will do well. We've just weighed our first cattle in onto it 3 weeks ago tomorrow. So they were 229 kilo average weight weaners. So it's a no-brainer for me from the results I'm getting from other blokes around the area that have been had it in for 3 years, and the results here, it's just a no-brainer.
Yes, the excitement was certainly palpable, talking about the potential of Redlands, and it's not just an esoterical concept now. The commercial launch will make that a reality for northern graziers looking to take advantage of the psyllid-resistant variety that has been bred specifically for this country. Jason Strong, from the MLA's point of view, let's talk a little bit more about the R&D priorities. Is the MLA doing enough to equip graziers with the tools that they need to be profitable?
Charlie, I think when you look at all the work that's been done by MLA in the last 20 years, you'd have to say that there's enough information there. But I think we are seeing a disconnect between all that we have done and the broader adoption right across the industry. And I think the important option or important opportunity for us now is to look at how we do actually extend the work that's been done, and how do we work more closely with the industry on the adoption of the R&D that we've invested in.
Jason Strong, Managing Director for the MLA, speaking with us in FNQ today, Far North Queensland, as part of the Field Days and as part of your Beef Up Forum. Thanks very much for taking some time to speak to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Charlie.
My next guest on the Country Hour needs no introduction. He is credited as the bloke who was the first to sell Australian beef to the biggest beef eaters in the world, the United States. Richard Raines, you're about to address the audience at the MLA's Beef Up Forum. Has your message changed? seems like you've been beating the drum for a while on marketing.
I have for a long, long time. It's one of those things, Charlie, you've just got to keep repeating it. I'll just correct that a little bit. I didn't sell the first Aussie beef to North America, but I did sell the first beef to McDonald's hamburger chain in North America. And that was a very long process. Their marketing campaign in the States had always been the all-American burger, but they were losing ground with their opponents, who were using imported product, and so eventually I was able to convince McDonald's to see the common sense and the economic common sense in using imported meat, imported frozen meat, which made a huge difference to their campaign, made a huge difference to Australia to have access to the biggest meat user in the whole world. And whilst I'm a great proponent of high quality meat and all that goes with that, every beef still has a certain amount of manufacturing meat, and it still needs to be of the highest quality to access the McDonald's system.
Let's just take that example of the grazier that's in, you know, out the back here in the Gulf Country. It's hard marginal country, and when they look at their marketing options, they think boats or meatworks. How do you tell them that they could go out and find a point of difference?
Charlie, first of all, they've got to be producing an animal which is most appropriate to the region that they're in, and the animal that will perform the best that they are in. But in my belief, Charlie, these days, we do need a point of difference for an animal. And so whether it can be organic, whether it can be natural, whether it can be HGP-free, antibiotic-free, suitable for the EU market, whatever the case may be, I think wherever we're producing it, if there is value in them getting out of commodity land and putting a tag on that beast, that will give the consumer the opportunity to pay more, to have an excuse to pay more for that product, that is where the producer will be a winner. As the consumer becomes more affluent, not only in Australia, Charlie, but around the world, they want something different and better. So they can brag to their mates that they've got organic meat or whatever the case might be. But there are obvious health benefits with having product that's a little bit different too. But we've got to differentiate our product, Charlie, and give that value proposition. We've got to think of the consumer all the time.
I take your point, but is that a bit cute for the grazier that is finding it hard to even make a profit on the most conventional of production systems?
Well, look, I can't talk about specific cases, Charlie. All I know is that that's reality land, that if you want to achieve a better price for a product, you've got to do something different with it rather than just producing a commodity.
So let's talk about sustainability then in the context of your area of specialisation, marketing. Is it just about being able to tick that green box for the marketing?
Well, when you say tick the green box, we're wanting to tick the box for the consumer to say, yes, Aussie beef, that is for me. It does tick all the boxes. I'm happy that it's sustainable, which is a whole story in itself, Charlie. It's a big story. But I think that gives the consumer that much more confidence to say that Aussie beef is the beef of choice for me. People around the world have lots of options, Charlie, not just of beef from different countries, but other proteins as well. And I think it's terribly important that Aussie beef can hang the banner and say, we're ticking all the boxes, or whatever boxes we can tick.
Let's talk about some of the headwinds. There are two countries flexing their muscle in the international trade arena at the moment, the United States and China. Now, when two of our largest trading partners are at war with each other, isn't that an opportunity for us?
A great opportunity, Charlie, and I don't get all the negative press. I really can't get my head around what this is all about. If America had a substantial unemployment problem, I could understand them getting excited. But at the end of the day, Charlie, I still believe there is a big bucket of supply and there is a big bucket of demand. And if America are no longer going to get that supply of whatever it might be from China, well, they'll get it from somewhere else at a more competitive price. And the beauty for us, Charlie, is that that might be Bangladesh or Vietnam or who knows where those other products might come from, but that's going to lift the living standards of another X millions of people who are then going to become beef consumers. So I think at the end of the day, it's a wonderful thing for us, Charlie. I see miles of opportunity for Australia in all of this.
One of the things I love about talking with you, Richard Raines, is you always have a positive message, and it's great to be able to share that one with our listeners on the Queensland Country Hour today, broadcasting as we are live from the Mareeba Rodeo Grounds on day one of the FNQ Field Days. Thanks so much for dropping
great
by.
Great to be back in FNQ, Charlie. Thank you for having me.
Good on you. Yeah, there's certainly a lot of excitement here at the Field Days, but as I alluded to a little earlier when I took you to Pinerendi Station, which is about halfway between Mount Surprise and Mount Garnet, and about 3 hours' drive inland from Cairns. So this is the site of the DAF trial site for the Redlands Lekena, which showed some really encouraging results. It showed that basically Redlands can match it with Wonder Greys and some of the established Lekena varieties getting around the place, but this one has an extra tool in the toolkit. It's resistant to psyllids, which have been so problematic. Now, the genesis for this variety started 19 years ago. Some might even say a little earlier. That's what I found out when I spoke with the plant breeder and the man who's dedicated two decades of his working career with the University of Queensland, Max Shelton.
Well, Redlands is 10% Lekena pallida, which by itself is not very high quality. But we now have the data which has come from this experiment here at Pinerendi, which shows that the live weight gains over almost a year are just as good as that from Wonder Groves, which is a straight Lekena leucocephala. So that's very pleasing. So we can now say that not only is Redlands highly tolerant or resistant to psyllids, but it also makes cattle fat.
Yet you also conveyed the fact that if given a choice in Lekena varieties, Redlands would not be the first pick for most cattle.
This Redlands has got 10% pallida, which by itself is not so palatable, not so preferred. But I don't think there's an important thing. Sometimes early in the season, grass is preferred over Lekena. If you look at the suite of legumes we have available to us, when cassia or stilo, when they're young, they're not particularly preferred. But when they're needed in autumn and winter, they are preferred. So preference by itself is not a problem.
And Max Shelton, after all the years of work that you've put into this variety, selecting and breeding for its attributes, what does this day represent to you as a plant breeder?
I feel very pleased and happy that a long period of work has resulted in something which is going to work. It's going to be profitable for the graziers. I think in life, if you do something which is going to work and is good for others, that's it gives you a sense of satisfaction. I think that's where I am. And I say also relief, because I was always a bit worried that Redlands, with that small amount of pallida in its genetic makeup, might mean that it doesn't make cattle fat.
But in some ways, Bruce Main, as a seed producer and established Lekena grower in central Queensland, you suggested that this is actually the real beginning, because these northern graziers are going to have to pioneer the growing. You've done the breeding and you've done the trials. Now it comes to actually establishing this as a crop in northern Australia. What lies ahead based on the experience that you've had in central and southern Queensland?
These fellas up here, they are pioneering a new area, and in such a vastly different sort of climate to what we're used to. And even up here, it varies considerably from the Tablelands, Cassowary Coast, out here into the McBride Plateau and places like that.
You've warned them that perseverance is a trait that they'll all need. What's your Lekena journey been like? Can you give us a snapshot?
We did have a bit of a farming background. We were growing grain and stuff before that, and that was a bit of a help. Our scrub soils were depleting in the Ralston area. We were looking for something to replenish that, and that did to a degree. But it's really in the Carnarvons where we noticed the biggest difference, which packed full of phosphorus, deep alluvial soils, and a pretty good rainfall. So that's where we really came to really appreciate the true rise in production, four times possibly from its natural state to what you could produce with Lekena.
Bruce Main, there are plenty of things that you could grow in that country, in the Carnarvon, in Rolleston, and you also have a block, I understand, on the river flats at Calliope. Why Lekena? Why is it the right fit for your production system?
When you ever ask an agronomist what's the best legume to plant or what's the most productive legume, you know, lucina always comes out on top as far as production figures, and it is an effort to put it in, but the capital cost of land is very expensive, and if you can raise that production level by a significant amount, which you can with lucina, that's pretty outstanding, really.
Greg Brown, you've been one of the true pioneers of lucina in North Queensland. You were growing lucina on a different variety, obviously, on Meadowbank 25 years ago. Can you just take up where Bruce Main left off? Because you were very keen to offer a North Queensland perspective on that.
Well, firstly, Charlie, the issue of psyllids was absolutely enormous, and it was actually defoliating a lot of that by June. A lot of that lucina over there was defoliated, and then we had frost on top of that. So they were both pretty major impediments, even though we had double the carrying capacity and double the weight gain, even under those circumstances. But we knew we could do a lot better. And then Max happened to be there in the year 2000, and he raised the issue of we could grow this. Well, I was immediately very enthusiastic. I think it's a superior plant, and I'm interested to say that Max has mentioned that and Bruce has mentioned that, because it will put on a lot of seed, but it will still keep growing. And I've now been watching it for, well, probably 3 or 4 years reach maturity, and it doesn't affect the leaf production at all. And I think that's just absolutely amazing.
Yet here at Pinerendi, when we have been hearing about the trial results, there are vulnerabilities. There are a lot of herbivores, other than cattle, that like Redlands. There's also a lot of issues to do with the inputs that have had to go on here in terms of fertiliser to overcome soil quality and then pesticides to keep those bloody pests off. So why are you so confident that the effort in the management and the expense is going to get a return on investment?
Well, I think this is an interesting project here, Charlie, because it's in not a topsoil. And Max talked about that in his talk. He sees it growing all over the place, and I do too, down around Townsville. Very poor soil, great colour, and there appears to be nothing wrong with it. And here we are here, and it's had a lot of fertiliser. It's only had one dose of insecticide, so that was an issue that was solved fairly quickly. But we haven't solved the fertility issue, and I think perhaps that it is an element that we don't understand, or a trace element or something of that nature. We don't understand, but I am totally convinced that one day it will be solved.
North Queensland grazier Greg Brown, Associate Professor Max Shelton, and Bruce Main, who's come up all the way from Central Queensland, seed producer of this new lucina Redlands variety, speaking with me yesterday at Pinerendi Station, just outside of Mount Surprise. Right now, though, I am at the Mareeba Rodeo Grounds, day one of the FNQ Field Days, and there is so much to see and do. As a rural reporter, I can tell you I'm in complete sensory overload. I'm going to sign off now and hand back to the studio, and I'm going to go and get amongst it.